Quantum workshop is from machine learning school, and you can see the robot which is trying to learn how the man, which looks like Einstein, is doing things. And you have the monkey which has the fire already. So I will try to briefly introduce what is machine learning, just to give a quick overview. And I will try to focus on really three connections. One which is called computational learning theory, which is the theoretical part of machine learning. Another which is how to speed some classical machine learning algorithm if you use quantum computers. And the third one is how to learn on quantum states. And I will briefly say a few other connections and conclude. So what is machine learning? It's a field of computer science, more precisely it's a subfield of AI. And the goal is to give to machines the capacity to learn. So you train them on some examples, and you want them to predict or to generalize to other examples they have not seen. So there is two type of learning usually considered. There is supervised learning, where you have some example of a task. For example, you have example of spam, and you have example of valid email. And you want to train the machine to recognize if you receive a new email, is it a valid email or is it a spam? So in supervised learning, you know that you train on some example where you know that this email is either a spam or a valid email. And for instance, you give 100 of them to the machine, you hope it will learn, and when you receive a new email in your account, you hope that it will be able to recognize it. Is it a spam, is it a true email? In unsupervised learning, the goal is different. You give a lot of data to the machine, and what you want is the machine to discover some structure that is hidden in the data and you don't know a priori. So for instance, you can try to find cluster of similar objects. Of if I give a lot of songs to my machine and I don't tell it, is it reggae, rock? Maybe if the machine is able to discover what are the cluster of songs, it will be able to recognize automatically what are the songs which are related to rock, what are the songs that are related to reggae. That could be one application. Another one could be to find a low-dimensional representation of your data. So for instance, if you want to do image or sound compression. So usually, when you do machine learning, you always have a training data set. You have some observation of some example of task. So if you are doing supervised learning, you have, for instance, if you have an email, you could have the number of times the word money is in the email, the number of times he asks you to send your credit card number, for instance. So this could be observation. So usually observation are like a vector of attributes. So number of words like for money, number of words for credit card could be, number of words for Viagra could be another way to detect spam. And so you know the class. So the class could be, is it a true email, is it a spam? So usually X is the vector of observation, and Y is the class. So if you have, for instance, if you have a dimension D with D real attributes, then you have a vector of D real attributes, and your class, if you are doing only binary classification, such as email versus spam, could be just -1 or +1. So one example of, so classification is the most basic task in machine learning. So you, for instance, you want to classify, is it spam or email? It could be one classification task. You will also to want to recognize some, if you have a picture, is there the face of some person you know in the picture? That could be a classification task. So is the face present in the picture or not? That's a classification. Also, is it a reggae or a rock song could be one example of classification. So Julie, what you have is, okay, I'm gonna trace the laser. So you have a bunch of data points which have labels, which are the class. And what you want is to learn some boundary decision. So what really we call that a classifier. And for instance, this could be email and this could be spam. So if you receive a new data point, you look, is it on the right side of the boundary decision or is it on the left side? And if it's on the left side, you can classify it. For instance, it's a spam. If it's on the right side, then it's an email. So another task I already mentioned is clustering. So in clustering, you want to cluster together objects that are similar. So you have a bunch of data points, like in this picture. You don't know their labels, so that's the main difference between supervised and unsupervised learning. And what you want is an algorithm to return some cluster, some category of points. So one example I've mentioned already is a clustering song. So, okay, I know it's hard to read, but for instance, if you look here, this is all classic song. You have some hard rock song which are clustered in this island. This is between, it's like folk mellow song. So what we have gave is, we have gave all the song to the machine and we didn't tell to the machine, is it reggae, is it rock? So it has automatically discovered this cluster. And this is an application from master's thesis from a student in Vienna, but really what is, it's really nice because it also allows you to see in two dimensions how songs are related. So to describe my song, I have a lot of attributes like what are the notes, what is the melody, but then I can, with the clustering algorithm, I can really visualize easily our song. Yeah. So it's okay. So imagine that the data is really in a high dimension, and this is only a way to visualize. So there is no really axis. It's only songs that are similar in sense of some similarity function. So the similarity will depend on is the notes the same, is the melody the same, is the author the same, and so on. So this is only for visualization, so you don't have really axes, just a graphical representation of the cluster. Okay, you all know quantum information. So quantum information is really different from classical data. So if you want to do learning with quantum information, you have to adapt to this new type of information. For instance, you cannot measure quantum information without disturbing the state, or you cannot do some copy of the state. And if you use classical and quantum information, you can do things that you cannot do classically. So you can factorize large integer, and you can do quantum crypto, for instance. So what do I mean by quantum learning? Is quantum learning will be all the connection between these two fields. So it's a very broad definition. And I want to say what is not quantum learning. So quantum learning is not a culinary institute in New Zealand. So if you go to Google and you type quantum learning, you will have a lot of links that are not relevant, and it's not a way to make you upgrade your skill for your career. So that's not what I want to say by quantum learning. So, okay, what I do is try to touch, really, it's really a broad area, so I will only say a few things about all these things. So first, how do you compare classical and quantum learning? That would be my first example. Second, how can you speed up classical machine learning algorithm if you have a quantum computer? Third, how can you learn on quantum information? And also, can you use some machine learning notion to prove lower bound for quantum communication complexity? And also, what's a quantum neural network? So, okay, what is computational learning theory? It's really the theoretical part of machine learning. So, the main example of task you have in this domain is you suppose you have given a black box. And this black box is computing some function. And the question is, how many queries do you need to ask to the black box before you can learn? So learn in the sense of either being exactly or in some approximate sense, the function. So obviously, the number of queries you will need will depend on the class of function that the black box can compute. So remember that in quantum information, usually we use the same kind of paradigm. So we suppose that, so if you do some quantum algorithm, usually the way it's described is you suppose you have some black box which computes some function. So it has to be unitary because it's quantum. And you want to compute some property of the function. So in computational learning theories, they really want to learn the function. In quantum algorithms, really, you just want to learn some property of the functions. So if you look at the JOSA, for instance, the question you ask is only, is it a function which is constant or is it balanced? So you are not really trying to learn what is a function. You are only looking at some property of the function. But the setting is the same than in computational learning theory. You are using a black box that you can query, and you want to learn some property about the function. So in 3 years ago, some people asked the question, so what if instead of learning some property, we really want to learn the function? So if we have a quantum black box instead of a classical one, does it help? So I was saying, you have some example like in Dutch Shoza with one query, you can learn is the function constant or balanced, and if you want to learn it classically with a classical black box, you will have to do exponentially more queries. So you have an example where there is exponential difference between the two. But that's only in the case where you want to learn some property. You are not really learning exactly the function. So there is two main learning model in classical computational theory. There is the exact learning, so you can ask query. As I was saying, you can ask query to the black box, and you really want to learn exactly what is the function computed by the black box. So some people have studied what is the quantum equivalent. So in quantum equivalent, you can ask in superposition a query. Classically, you will only ask one query at a time. And they were able to prove that the number of queries you need to exactly learn this function classically is at most some polynomial in the number of quantum queries. So really, if you want to do quantum and classical learning, they are equivalent in the sense that they all need a polynomial number of queries. There is no such thing as having an exponential number of queries classically and only polynomial quantumly if you want to learn exactly the function. So I'm not talking about learning some property, I'm talking about learning exactly what is the function. And they have also studied what if you want to learn approximately. So on some inputs, maybe you are allowed to make some mistake, but you want the accuracy to be really high. So maybe with 90%, you will be able to learn approximately what is the function. So the name of the domain is really funny. It's what's called the probably approximately correct. So with a high probability, you will be able to learn approximation of the function that is some high accuracy. So that's why it's probably approximately. And the answer was the same that in the exact learning model. So the number of queries you need to do classically is polynomially related to the number of queries you need to do quantumly. So if you want to learn some function in this model, you also have a polynomial relationship. So okay, you might ask, what does it mean to have this kind of thing? It only says that instead of information theory, so in the number of queries you need, the two models, classical and quantum, are really equivalent. So if you need a polynomial number of query classically, you will also need a polynomial number of query quantumly. But this doesn't say that if you want to really compute the function, so if you want to use all this information, all the query you have made, it doesn't say anything about the time you will need to learn this function. So it only say something about the number of query you will need to ask. And if you do some cryptographic assumptions, such as one-way function exists, then you can come with some class of functions that you can efficiently learn in the sense that polynomial time algorithm quantumly, but not classically. So there is really a difference between the number of query in sense of how much information do you have, and also what does it mean to be efficient in learning in sense of how many computation time do you need to really come with a function. Okay, second connection is, can we speed up some machine learning algorithm if you have a quantum computer? So there is a lot of domain where you have a lot of data, and we don't have yet a quantum computer, but if someday we have, could we speed up some clustering algorithm with this quantum computer? So one basic idea is to just take classical clustering algorithm and to quantize, which means to make quantum some of its part to speed up the algorithm. So one of the first algorithms for clustering, which was not really designed for doing clustering, but you can use it to do clustering, was on some complexity of graph problem in the quantum setting. So Christophe Dürr, Mark Ehrlichman, Peter Horner, and Mehdi Malla, in QIP 3 years ago, they present an algorithm for minimal spanning tree. And you can use it to do clustering. So I just want to show very briefly how you do that. Suppose you have a lot of points. And you want to cluster these points together, so you want to find group of points that are similar. What you could do is you can build the minimum spanning tree. So you, once you have the spanning tree, what you could do, and you can remove like the k minus one longest edge, and what you have left is really the cluster of points. So the algorithm was not made for clustering, but you can use it to do some clustering. And a nice result they have is they can prove that in this setting you have so the running time is n to the power of 3/2, and classically if you use algorithms such as prim on a complete graph, you will need n squared. So you have some improvements. Okay, so So in 2 weeks, I'm going to go to machine learning conference to present this result. So I'm always in the model where we have a black box, so which is not really realistic, but I suppose that we give a black box to me, and I can query the black box to ask for the distance between two data points. So I have, suppose I have a training data set of n data points, and I can ask what is the distance between these points, which is I, and the other point, which is g. And then I get the distance, so I can query in superposition and get a superposition of distance. So always remember the main difference is quantumly you can ask in superposition. Classically, you will need to ask one query at a time. So if you use some variant of Grover, you can develop some subroutine to speed up clustering algorithms. So for instance, the same year that Grover came with this algorithm, there was also a version how to find the minimum in a function. So not just to find some x such that f of x equal 1, but also to find the minimum of the function. So you can use that to find, for instance, what is the closest neighbor of a point in square root of n time. Or you can find what is the maximum distance between two points in square root of n square, which is n. And also you have other variants such as finding all the closest neighbor of a point or find the point with minimal average distance. So all these subroutines are really using some Grover trick, and you can use them to speed up classical machine learning algorithms. So in Grover, you have two parts. You have the phase flipping part, where you change the phase of the state depending on some property, and you have the inversion about the average. So inversion about the average is always independent of the function you want to compute. So you, but the phase flipping part, you have to change depending on the subroutine you are using. So for example, in this, this circuit, what it's only doing is changing the phase of states which have a distance which is above some max distance that are already computed. So really, what I just want to say is that I can take this circuit and plug in Grover directly. And I can use, for instance, the algorithm for finding the maximum distance. So what this will do, it will change always the phase of state which have about some distance. And then you can use some amplitude amplification to find some new states which are above this distance, and you can apply this algorithm. So one algorithm you can speed up, for instance, is K-median. So K-median is really the classical machine learning algorithm. So if you invent a new machine learning algorithm, you have to compare this algorithm to K-medians. So this algorithm is very simple. It's an iterative algorithm which has two steps. So each step is, first step is you look for each point, what is the closest center. So it's an algorithm which returns K cluster. Each cluster has a center. And at first, you, at random, you choose some points which will be the initial center of the cluster. And then you will iterate the algorithm. So each iteration is first step, you look for the closest center for each point. Second step, you recompute the center by choosing the median about all the points in the cluster. So if you want to do it classically, and you want to find what is the median from n points, you will need n square computation if you are in high dimension. So if you are in low dimension, you can use some geometric trick, but if you are in arbitrary high dimension, you will need time which is n square. If you do it quantumly, you can use some variant of Grover to do it in time which will be n to the power 3/2. So I have the same speed up than MALA and co-authors as in clustering with minimum spanning tree. So, okay, I don't want to go in detail of the algorithm, but I just say it's iterative algorithm. So you choose the center at random at beginning, and then you iterate until you have stabilization of the cluster center. So there is one main problem that if in real life you will have a quantum computer, which is still a supposition, and someone comes to you with a classical machine learning data set, you will not have someone which gives you the black box directly in your hand, and you just have to run your algorithm. What you would have to do really is to construct a quantum circuit which you can use as a black box from this classical training data set. But unfortunately, because of all results from Bennett, you can take any classical circuit which can compute some function, some distance, and you can make it quantum without, so you can make it reversible, which means you can implement it as a quantum circuit. So for a large class of distant function, I can efficiently construct some circuits that I can use. So if you come to me with a training data set, there is a constructive recipe I could use to really build this quantum circuit efficiently. And also the one bonus is once you go in building explicitly the circuit, you can also come with distributed version of the learning task. So suppose I want to do learning with Martin and I have half of the training data set and he has the other half. What I could do is I could still get the same speed up, but this time will be in terms of communication cost by using directly explicitly the circuit. Okay, I hope I'm not lost too many people. So the third connection, so if you have questions, just ask it along or at the end, as you wish. Third connection is how will you learn if you have quantum state, so instead of classical information. So there is two main motivations for quantum information people. So can we use some machine learning algorithm to learn on quantum state? And maybe can it give some approach, constructive approach for some quantum detection scenarios that we have in the lab? For machine learning people, the motivation would be, oh, if you change the physical theory, how does it change the learning process? So if you are doing machine learning with a quantum data set, the main difference, instead of having a vector of real attributes, is what you have is quantum states. So each quantum state is composed of n qubits, and they live in a Hilbert space of dimension 2 to the d if you have d qubits for each state. So you can imagine each state is a pure state of some dimension. And I'm still in the case where I consider that the class would be a classical class, so either positive or negative. So for instance, if I know that these states come from some quantum phenomena, which I label A, I could label this state with label A. And if I know that I have another state from my training data set, which called from another quantum phenomena, which is label, I label arbitrarily B, I could say that the label of this class is B. So there is a lot of learning class you can come up, because if you are quantum state, you can have, there's different way I can give to you quantum state. I can either give to you a classical description, which is the more powerful in the sense of information theory, because once you have the classical description, you can do as many copies as you want, always if you have the quantum computer. Or I can also only give you a few copies of the states. So what could you do if you have only a few copies and each state live in a high dimension? So for instance, if you want to classify the state, so if I give you some states in the past, which is a training data set, and I ask you in the future, I give you some unknown state, and I ask you, is it a state which comes from the quantum phenomenon A or the quantum phenomenon B? So if you have learned, it will to classify, it will mean you will be able to predict with good probability, is it some state which belong to A or is it some state which belong to B? So quantumly, if you have a classical description, you can do two kinds of things. Either you can try to find the measurement which maximizes the probability of making a good guess. So I will guess that is A, or I will guess that it B. And I know that with high probability, my guess will be correct, but I will never be sure that my guess will be correct. That will be the first kind of measurement you could do. Or you can do also what is called unambiguous discrimination. So with some probability, you allow the measurement to have some failure and to say, I don't know. So in some time, you will never know if this state belongs to A or belongs to B. But if the measurement tells you it belongs to B, then you are sure of the result. So that's a different type of measurement. So you want to minimize the probability of making a wrong guess. So sometime you will never know what was the phenomenon of the state. But when you know the answer with unambiguous discrimination, you are sure of it. Yeah. So you, okay, like for a phenomenon would be, for instance, you have some black box or some phenomenon which is giving copy of states frequently, and you want to learn. So the phenomenon could be also modeled as a density matrix, for instance. Density matrix. So you could be, if you know that all these states, different states belong to the same phenomenon, what you could do is you can also try to represent the phenomenon as a mixture of all these pure states. So you will come with a different density matrix with, for all the phenomena. And then really your goal is to discriminate between is this state belonging to this density matrix or to this other one. So okay, if you want to do learning, there is a lot of, and you have only a few copies, there is different strategy you can do. For instance, you could try to do tomography, so you take all the copy and you use all the information you have to build some classical description of the state. Okay. If you have a few states and your quantum state live in high dimension, it's really a problem because usually what you need is an exponential number of copies in the dimension to do good tomography. What you could do also is not to touch to the states and wait until you have to classify an unknown state, and then at that time you will use some measurement which use these states to classify the states. So in one case you use all the copies to do some classical description of the states. In the other case you wait when classification times come and you use it. And all, of course you can also do some hybrid strategy. So you could use maybe half of the state to do some tomography to learn some classical information and keep half of the state for classification later. So, okay, there is bound in the training error in the sense of there is bound in the probability that you have of making a wrong guess. So in a, if you want to maximize the probability of good guess, there is a really old bound from Elvstrom, which is more than 30 years ago. If you want to do unambiguous discrimination, so sometimes you're allowed to say, I don't know, there is, 2 years ago, there is people which also have developed bounds. So, as I was saying, you can also represent each class by a mixture of density matrix, so a mixture of each pure state that the class belongs to. So, once you have this, this description as density matrix, you can use them to develop bounds also. Okay. One thing you could do also is to do clustering on these states. So when you do clustering, you always need some similarity measure. So because you, if you have 2 points, you need some way to tell, to are these 2 points related or not. So one natural notion in quantum is the fidelity. So I suppose a lot of people know about fidelity, but really what it's saying is, are two states the same or different? So if the state are orthogonal, the fidelity is going to be zero. If the states are the same, the fidelity is going to be one. And if the fidelity will always vary between these two extreme cases. And one important property is that the fidelity is symmetric. So if you take the fidelity of two states, yeah, it's going to be symmetric. And also it's invariant under unitary permutation, transformation, sorry. So if I take two states and I apply the same unitary operation to these two states, it's not going to change the fidelity. And it's not really a metric in the sense that it doesn't obey the triangle inequality. But if you take the R cost of the fidelity, then you really have, you respect the triangle inequality and you really have a metric. So, you. So what if I give you a few copies of two different quantum states, how can you estimate the fidelity? One way to do it is to use the control swap test. So the control swap test was designed first in it was used in quantum fingerprinting, but it was also used before in the stabilization of quantum states. So what really this test is doing is taking two pure states and is, with some probability it will input one, and the probability depends on the fidelity between these two states. So if I have a few copies of each state, what I can do is apply a constant number of time this test and I will have an estimate of the fidelity. So the more you have copy, the more the estimate will be reliable and will be accurate. And one side effect is once you have done this test, you will have project your quantum state either in the symmetric or anti-symmetric subspace. So you will have disturbed them. You cannot reuse them later to do other things. So, so this test can be used to estimate the fidelity. So if I want to do clustering, what I want to do is I want to use this fidelity as a measure of similarity, and I want to cluster together quantum states that are similar. So if I had a high number of copies and the state live in small dimension, the best thing I could do is doing tomography. But if the state live in high dimension and I have a few copies of the states, I could not do quantum tomography because normally I would need an exponential number to have a good fidelity between my classical reconstruction and the true state. So But what I could do is I could use the control swap test to estimate the fidelity. Because to estimate the fidelity, you don't need a lot of copy. With a constant number of copy, you can have a good estimate in the fidelity. So you can know, are the two states really close together, are they far apart? So once you could do, for instance, what I do, I create 5 clusters. Each cluster has a pure state at the center, and then I apply some noise to the center of the cluster, such that the point that I generate is not too far from the center of the cluster. And then, so what I could do is I could build some matrix. So for each pair of quantum state, I look what is the similarity between this pair of states. And then I use this information to cluster together states that are similar. And so here the quality of clustering 1 means I was able to perfectly recover the cluster. And here is the noise I add. So the more I add noise, the less the fidelity between the states that are noisy and the center, the true center of the cluster will be high. So the more I add noise, the less I have a good clustering after. But I can see even with a quite high number of noise, I can still recover what is the true structure of the cluster. So to do that, I only need to do a number of control swap tests, which is quadratic in the number of quantum states, because I estimate the fidelity between each pair of states. I don't need an exponential number of them. So all I want to say is that for some learning tasks, you don't need to do tomography. And you don't need to have an exponential number of copies. You can use some quantum trick to do better. And there was also last year a very nice paper from Scott Aronson that, so the setting is different. Suppose you have an unknown state and you have some distribution on measurements. And the question is, how many measurements do you need to do before you can learn some approximation on new measurements? So, for instance, imagine I have 1,000 measurements and I have one state. On how many measurements do I need to train my state before I can predict on unknown measurement what the answer will be? So in this setting, it also proves that you only need a linear number of measurement and not an exponential number of measurement to predict an unknown measurement what the state will answer. Okay. I just want to briefly say a few other connections very quickly. So there is some people which have used some machine learning notion to give lower bound in quantum communication complexity. So one notion is called the margin. The margin, remember at the beginning I show if you want to do some classification, you have always a boundary decision. So if you are below, for instance, you will predict that the point is a white point. If you are above, it's a black one. So if you receive a new point, you look, is it on the right or left side to do your prediction? And the margin is really what is the distance between the boundary decision and the points that you are trying to classify. So the idea is, look, compare this to, in both cases, you will be able to perfectly discriminate between the two classes. But in one case, you have a high distance between your boundary decision and the points, and in the other case, you have a low distance. And it was proved that if you have a high distance, if you want to do classification, you will have a high learning power, so you will be able to generalize by it. So there is the best machine learning algorithms that are used currently classically. They use this kind of notion of margin, and they try to maximize the margin. So last year, some people have proved that there is a link between quantum fingerprinting protocols and the margin. So the connection is such that if you have a good learning algorithm with a good lower bound of the margin, then you can use this connection directly to give new upper bound on quantum fingerprinting protocols. And the connection goes also the other way around. So if you have efficient multi-round quantum protocol for quantum fingerprinting, you can use it directly to give a lower bound on the classical machine learning problem. So what is good is it means if you can use results that people have in classical machine learning to give bound to quantum communication complexity problem, and it also goes the other way around. So if you are able to give some bound for some quantum communication protocol based on fingerprinting, then you can also have good lower bound on margin for some learning problems. That's really a nice connection. Okay, and the last connection I want to mention is what would be a quantum neural network. So just briefly, that is the kind of neuron you have in your brain. That's a natural neural network. And artificial neural network is a machine learning algorithm that uses the same kind of topology, the same kind of ID. So you have some input, you have some neurons which process the information, you have few layers of them, and at the end you have some outputs. So they are also quite efficient learning algorithms, usually. And people have started to ask questions, what would be the quantum version of that? So a philosopher even asked the question in 94. Since then, a lot of people have proposed a lot of different models. There is even a book about that, but it's still not clear what exactly a quantum neural network should be. So should it be a quantum representation of a classical network? Should it be used only to classify quantum information? Should it be a quantum algorithm to learn more quickly a classical neural networks? So I just want to say that right now, in my case at least, I'm still not clear and not convinced what is. And there is some problem also. People have tried to argue, so some machine learning people have tried to argue that you can have exponential gain in the way you represent your neural network, but this contradicts some other results in quantum random access code. So if you look in the archive, be careful if you look in the paper about quantum neural network, because there is some paper which claim you can have exponential gain, and then so you have comment on this paper saying that this paper is wrong. So just be careful if you go if you see papers that claim something that seems really nice but may not be true. And so things I have not talked about is how you can take some information from quantum mechanics to design clustering algorithm, how you can do quantum channel modeling using some other machine learning techniques, and also there is other connection. Okay, I'm finished. I know I was quite quick and I just touched the surface of all these things, but I just wanted to review a few connections and so you can have a feeling that machine learning and quantum information are not so far apart. And if you have questions or if you want reference, you can just ask me later. Okay, thank you. Okay. Is it a bad sign or a good sign? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there is machine learning and data mining are really connected. So data mining is like the practical part of machine learning. So you really want to go to a business and you have some data and you want to apply machine learning algorithms. So you need also to do cleaning of data, interpretation and so on. But it's clearly related. To me, data mining is like a practical application of machine learning notions. So. This controversy I was talking about, they use what they call quantum neural associative memory, which means you are not really trying to classify, but you are trying to have a compact representation of some learning data sets. So in this paper, he's trying to make link between this type of neural network which are used classically and the quantum equivalence. But as I say, there is a big problem because he's claiming that he can have exponential gain in the storage, and this contradicts some other theorem about a quantum random access code and that you cannot have exponential storage in n qubits. I'm just saying that because I want people to be careful if they read paper on the archive. Just sometimes it's claiming things that are wrong. And sometimes what is good is that people are putting some comment about this paper and just saying that what is wrong with this paper. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, I'm not only talking about pure states.